Welcome to Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson. 891. ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning to you, Sophie Thompson, and welcome to Talk Back Gardening.
Good morning, Deb, and good morning, listeners, on this stunning autumn day. Perfect for gardening. I love autumn. It is such a great time to be out in the garden.
It is. It's my favourite season of the year. You get that beautiful, cool weather. You get some amazing sunsets. And in fact, thank you to this texter saying that we had stunning rainbows over the ocean, Wright Island and the bluff at Encounter Bay during the show. So thank you very much for that. A bit of autumnal rain can bring a few pests too. Might have a chat to you about that later in the program, Sophie. We've got a couple of ABC Gardening magazines to give away later as well. But we want your calls. 1300 222 891 is the number to call. Call in now, and we always welcome your comments on 0467 922 891. The autumn show of the Orchid Club of South Australia is happening today, Saturday the 11th of April at the Klemzig Community Hall, 232 Northeast Road in Klemzig. Plant sales, potting demonstrations, cultural informations, all sorts for $5 to get in from 10 until 4 today. And the man behind that, it joins us now, Trevor Garrard, who is from the Orchid Society of South Australia. Good morning, Trevor.
Good morning, Deb. Good morning, Sophie and listeners.
Now, Sophie is an incredible gardener, but orchids can be a bit tricky, so you're going to give us a few tips on what to do now, really, to get our wonderful orchids blooming beautiful in spring.
During December, I tell people that's got cymbidiums to go out at night, all through December, about 8:30 at night, and mist the leaves to get a 10 to 12 degree drop between day and night temperature. That inspires them to start spiking. You might not see the spikes on some of them until winter or even spring, but that's when you need to have your stuff done. As you were saying, autumn's good because you get the cool nights, and that's doing the job for you anyway if you've got the late flowering ones.
Fantastic. Now, first off, you know, when orchids are in bloom in springtime or winter, you know, everyone's inspired to buy them and we go home with them, but we often don't have the right conditions to get them to flower again because they need quite a bit of light. And I've seen often orchids placed under a big, you know, evergreen tree that's really dark. They do need light. That's a primary condition, isn't it, Trev?
It certainly is, yeah. Do your cultural research on the plant you've got, just how much light. Like a Phalaenopsis, don't need a lot as you grow them inside. But the big speciosums, Dendrobium speciosums, the Australian natives, all through the year, I give mine complete light until about late spring, summer. Then I put a 50% shade over them so the leaves don't burn. But that's the sort of thing they need. And the cymbidiums are the same. I've seen too many cymbidiums that look like cabbages. They've just got big green leaves and no flowers. And you can tell by the really dark green leaves, the person, they go, got it in the wrong spot.
Okay, so you just said something really interesting. So people often think of orchids in a shade house. So your shade cloth is, you have them in shade over summer, but then you have them out in full sun, you know, autumn till spring.
Yeah, the big dendrobiums, I've got about half a dozen big ones that I'll be splitting up at some stage, and they need enough light. If my shade cloth now 30 years old, so it might be degrading a bit, and I might get away with leaving it in the shade cloth. But I drag them out. I'll probably do that next weekend, get them out and leave them in full sun, and you seem to get a lot more spikes on them doing that.
Okay, and so cymbidiums the same? Because most people, you know, are likely to know cymbidiums. They're the traditional orchid. While there's an amazing diversity, they're the ones that most people would see. So do you have them under shade cloth over winter?
I don't move them. I've just got too many.
Okay, well, I'm sure you do. You've probably got hundreds, Trevor, thousands probably. Okay, so light is a big factor, not to put them where it's too dark. The next factor is nutrition.
Yeah, you've got to fertilise them. A lot of people don't. I've given some away to neighbours and all, and I say, you've got to feed them. Well, no, they'll flower anyway, but they do. They get enough light, so they do flower, but they get one, maybe two spikes. There's only three flowers on it. It's a poor flowering. They should be getting 10 flowers, and 6 or 7 spikes on the big plants. So you really do have to feed them.
Yeah.
When they're actively growing and you see the new growths coming up, mm-hmm. high nitrogen fertilizer to feed that. And when they start spiking, switch to your potassium, high potassium, NPK, get rid of the N, put NPK in.
Okay, so you can buy specialist orchid fertilizers that'll make all of this easy for you. So if you're using, say, a liquid fertilizer, how often are you doing it? Are you applying that every couple of weeks?
When I was commercially growing, I was using it every week at full strength.
Wow.
Every watering. But I wouldn't advise people that's working and not looking at their plants continually to do that.
Yep.
Because they might be overdoing it and they're not looking at it the plant will respond accordingly.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah,
so
switch fertilizers midway through when they're about to spike.
Okay. Okay. And what is there a month that you'd know that they're about to spike? Is that sort of June, or is that too late?
No. They'll be spiking now. You'll see the little spikes emerging.
Okay.
And the difference between a spike and a new growth is if you gently, very gently, because they'll snap easily in the cool conditions, if you just touch the top, and if it's got a bit of give in it, like a little air capsule, it's a spike. If it's tough and hard, it's a new growth.
Okay. How amazing. Yeah. Okay, so we've covered light, we've covered nutrition. What about, you know, if someone's got an orchid that they got from their mother years ago, or, you know, they got on a trading table years ago and it's never had any love. Tell us about when you divide and repot them and how.
Most of the people wait till they just about bust the pot.
Yeah.
And it's probably too late. Because people bring them into events like this and say, can you help me out? And I end up repotting for them. And it's actually split right down the middle of the plastic pot.
Yep.
But when that's about to happen, get them out, and then you look at the divisions. A lot of people, when they do divide them, think they'll get 10 plants out of it, and they'll get one bulb, one new growth, and they'll take 3 or 4 years to flower then. Mm-hmm. But if you look at your big plant, look at there'll be little division lines down there, and you probably get 3, possibly 4 decent divisions out of a very big cymbidium, but don't have any more than that. Always leave 3 active bulbs. It's new growth, and they'll flower the next year. If people come in, they'll see me doing that in a couple of hours' time.
Yeah. Now, one other thing that's a bit of a misconception, people often buy cymbidiums and keep them inside. Is that okay?
When they're flowering, you can put them in a nice ceramic pot and take them inside. Mm-hmm. As soon as that spike is finished, cut the spike off and put them back outside. They will not flower inside. Not enough light. Completely wrong. They don't grow in conditions like that in the wild. So,
But Phalaenopsis, on the other hand, which are the sort of beautiful moth orchid types, they are perfect for inside.
In Adelaide, they have to be inside unless you've got a dedicated heated conditions, a glass house or something like that. Yeah, they have to be inside. They get too cold here in Adelaide.
Uh-huh.
I've seen them growing in railway ballast up in Harvey Bay.
Yeah.
That's not anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good to know. So if you fall in love with cymbidiums, you know, because you visit the show or you visit an orchid show through winter and spring, take them home, enjoy them in your ceramic pot, and then do as Trevor says and put them outside when they finish flowering. So if people come along to the show, there are going to be experts like yourself doing demonstrations talking about how to grow orchids. So, you know, you don't just go to the show because you're an expert orchid grower. You go because you're interested in them and you want to know more about them.
Yeah. I've been doing this for nearly 30 years now. And you always go, if you go to a good, experienced presenter, you'll always walk away learning something you didn't know when you got there, even though you've spent 30 years doing it.
Oh, I was just going to say, just on the issue of temperature, Hannah in Yankalilla has said cymbidium orchids also need a temperature drop to 17 degrees Celsius during summer to trigger flowering, achieved by a short spray with water from the hose in the evening. I grow mine under 50% shade cloth. That's a bit consistent with what you were saying at the outset there, Trevor.
Yeah, I'm not that specific with the temperature. I just say, well, if it's been 30 degrees during the day, get them down to 20 at night.
Okay.
Misting rosy lure it easily.
Another one's just come through from Sangeeta at Linden Park saying, my cymbidium has spiked now. Is that normal? It's next to the south-facing wall and gets plenty of light and morning sun.
Yep. There's some early ones. There's some here for sale in spike and in flower. So the early ones, they crossed with yellows years ago and they will flower very early, April, March. One was Golden Off Sundust was a famous one. And then because the breeding's been done so prolifically over the last 25, 30 years, we've been using the Australian cymbidiums because there's three native Australian cymbidiums that grow in Queensland across the Northern Territory. So they flower in Christmas time. So with breeding back onto the other hybrids, we're extending the flowering time from December to December. Mm. So you're looking for spikes all the time.
That's fantastic, Trevor. So get along, speak to Trevor and other experts like him at the Orchid Club of South Australia Autumn Show today. Trevor, have a great show and thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks a lot for the opportunity and we will have a good show, no doubt.
Lovely. Thank you, Trevor Garrod from the Orchid Society of South Australia. Jump on the phone. Sophie is here to take your calls on 1300 222 891. Thank you to Rachel in the Southern Hills who's just harvested from their 45-year-old quince tree yesterday, 100 quinces, including 10 nibbled by the parrots through the net. And you should see the photo, Sophie. It is amazing. That is a haul and a half. Thank you for that.
And can I just say about quinces, you know, because at some point, how much quince jelly, how much, you know, quince paste can you eat? If you Google honey roasted quince blondie, it's on my website. It is spectacular. You roast the quinces in honey and then make this amazing white chocolate blondie and it's spectacular and it freezes. So you can either freeze the quinces when they're honey roasted to make the blondie later or you can make the blondie and freeze it too.
Oh, wonderful suggestion. Sophie only has 8 million of them, so ring up and get some advice from her right now, 1-300-222-891. Margaret from Boencare in Victoria has done that. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning.
Now, you've got Sophie here. You'd like to speak about a maidenhair fern.
Yes, it's quite old. It's got yellowish-brown nodules on the fronds, and mm-hmm. that's sticky. And it's causing the fern to die back.
Absolutely. Okay, so what you've got is you've got scale. Now, scale is a little, it doesn't look like it's an insect, but it's a little inanimate, well, you know, it doesn't move around as such. And it sucks the sap of your fern, which makes it sticky, produces this sweet honeydew. And sometimes you'll get ants come because of the scale. Now, the challenge is that really you want to, at some point, your maidenhair fern has stressed and that's why the scale attacked it. So you've got to do two things. You've got to make your maidenhair fern happy and you've got to get rid of the scale. Now, you might try cutting all the growth off that has the brown nodules on it. Now, there is a spray we use for scale, which is horticultural oil, you know, so eco oil or something like that. But sometimes ferns don't like horticultural oil sprays. So what you would have to do is to do a little test patch on one frond, see what happens when you spray it with the horticultural oil and see if the fern burns a bit. Another thing you could use would be neem. But again, I would do a test patch with the maidenhair fern because they're delicate. So number one, you know, the way I'd handle it would be actually to cut all the fronds off. We know that when we do that to maidenhairs, they produce new growth and give it a little bit of, you know, soluble fertilizer and a little bit of a boost. And somehow think, okay, well, maybe when I went away for that week, it got neglected, you know, in summer, and that's why it got stressed.
Yes.
So, you know, if it was me, I'd be likely just to, if all the stems are affected with that scale, I'd cut them all off. But otherwise, you could try and spray, but you have to do a test patch first. So I'd be trying with a horticultural oil like eco oil or something like neem. Both of them are fairly natural, but you must do a test patch.
Good. Thank you very much. Should I repot it as well?
How long's it been in the pot?
Oh, last century.
Okay, well, it might be time to be really generous and get some beautiful organic enriched soil and repot it. And certainly, you know, seaweed-based plantonic, slow-release organic fertiliser, give it a treat. And, you know, maidenhair ferns don't like to dry out. And if it's an old plant, you know, it's going to love you repotting it and giving it a zhuzh.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thanks, Margaret. All not just from the last century, from the last millennium. And thanks for calling in from Victoria. Good. Lovely to have you aboard.
Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The phone number to speak to Sophie is 1300 222 891. We'll come to more of your calls in just a moment.
Welcome to Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
891
ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Sophie, Phil from Woodside says, another tip for excess quince jam or jelly, mix it with some good balsamic vinegar to make a beautiful quince ninokoto.
Oh, sounds yum.
You can add that to your list of things to do with quinces. Now, Carol has called in from Mount Barker about an orchid. Good morning, Carol.
Oh, good morning. I've been gifted many orchids, but the one I want to talk about today is one that's been gifted to me in a, like, you know, the old spaghetti jars with the corks on top. It's in one of those jars. It's about 10 centimetres diameter. And I've had it for 3 years. It's flowered for 3 years. And it's really looking poorly. I just think it needs to be repotted or something. I wouldn't know how to repot it out of the spaghetti jar.
Okay, so can I ask, is this an orchid that instead of having long, thin leaves, has broad, fat leaves?
Yes.
And a tall
I've got the spelling of it. It's got P-A-A-L-A-E-N-O-P. Yes, there you go.
Phalaenopsis. Okay, so they are called moth orchids. They are very special plants. I mean, one thing to do would be to head along to the Orchid Club today and, you know, the experts will show you what to do with it because they will have Phalaenopsis. But have you been feeding it at all?
No.
Okay. So you've had it for 3 years and it's looking a bit poorly. It might be hungry. So generally they've got sort of peat moss around their roots or some sort of very soft fibre. Is when you say a spaghetti jar, so it's all full of potting media?
No,
or just
probably the bottom 10 centimetres, 3 to 4 inches is dirt, and then it's just, you know, open. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. And this plant sits up the top of it or it's growing right down in the bottom of it?
It's lots of things going down into the bottom of it. Yeah.
Okay. It's I can't quite visualise this. It sounds really interesting. I'd love to see a photo. So the thing is, Phalaenopsis do need special attention, and they are tropical plants. So I would start with feeding it now, and then I'm going to say I'm not a Phalaenopsis expert, but I wouldn't be repotting it at this time because we're going into winter and they are a tropical plant. So I would be more inclined to hang off and not repot it now until we get to sort of September, October, but give it a feed. So you can go to your local nursery or garden centre and they'll have organic-based orchid fertilisers, and that's what I'd be giving it. And I would certainly, you know, today, if you contact the Orchid Society through their website, they may not be able to help you because there'll be flat chat. But, you know, even if you have some photos, because I can't visualise how it's growing in a spaghetti jar. So if you took some photos and sent it through, I'm sure they'd give you information, Carol.
Okay, I'll give it a go.
All the best with that.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Carol, for the call. We really appreciate you calling in on 1300 222 891. That's a number to get directly to Sophie Thompson this morning. Now joining us, we have Serena, who's in Clapham. Now, Serena, you've got a native finger lime. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Deb and Sophie. Where I work, we've got three native finger limes that are in the ground about 2 metres high. I picked fruit off one yesterday, which is looking magnificent, but the other two are very pale. The leaves are very pale. Someone from TAFE suggested that it had scale. I did notice bull ants on one of them, but the other two aren't really fruiting much. And I'm just wondering, like, because they're so thick, like, you know, prickly thick, and how do I treat them if they do have scale, please?
Okay. So is it likely that they might have dried out a bit over summer, Serena?
Yeah, they could have, possibly.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay, because usually when you get scale, it's triggered by something. And in our climate, usually, you know, it's the fact the plant's dried out or it's got root competition from a big tree or something like that. So you have to have
big other trees.
Like what sort of big other trees? Gum trees or natives?
No,
or?
Lily pillies.
Okay. Oh, okay. So, yeah. Okay. So they're competing for nutrients and they're also competing for moisture, and that means things dry out. So you need to have a couple of a two-pronged approach to manage scale. The first is because ants actually carry the scale from plant to plant. So they're like the most amazing dairy farmers, really. So you need to stop ants walking up your tree. Now, you can buy this thing called fruit tree grease band. And it's a strip of plastic that you open out, and it's got non-drying glue, horticultural glue, on the outside. So you wrap it around the base of your plant. Now, you might have to do it in two spots, because if there's a little tunnel underneath the grease band, the ants will just use the tunnel and get past. But that stops the ants crawling up the tree. Now, over time, the grease band stops being sticky, so leave it on there and you can just buy horticultural glue and reapply the glue to it. Now, I've got two citrus in pots, including a finger lime, that dried out in my move. And so if you were to see those plants, they've got that band on them at the moment I'm trying to stop the ants reinfecting them. So then the second thing is you spray with horticultural oil, and you have to spray thoroughly. Now, if you squirt, you know, upside down, top down, sideways in, I'm sure you'll cover most of the scale. And ultimately, if you see, so what it does is the horticultural oil puts a thin film over the scale and it stops it breathing. So it smothers the breathing apparatus of the scale, and in a short period of time it will die. So the horticultural oil might need a couple of sprays to get all the scale, but you will get on top of it. And, you might decide that, okay, look, there's a bit of dead wood in there too. So if there's a bit of dead wood, you might as well clean that off while it's there. But ultimately, you know, it's a several-pronged approach. You've got to manage the ants. That's what the banding's for. Then you've got to kill the scale. And if you think the plants are, if they're healthy and green, fine. But if they're a little bit seedy and yellow, they might also need a little bit of organic-based fertilizer suitable for citrus and on an ongoing basis.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Serena. Good luck with our native finger lime. Our phone line 1300 222 891 to speak to Sophie Thompson.
Welcome to Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
891
ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Back Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb, and good morning, listeners, on this beautiful autumn day, perfect for getting in the garden.
It is. So if you want some advice, call in now on 1300 222 891. I've got a couple of Gardening Australia magazines to give away. I might do that right now because we've got a lot going on in the program this morning. If you haven't won anything from the ABC in the last month and you would like to win yourself an ABC Gardening Australia magazine, we'll give one away by phone on 1300 222 891, and one by text on 0467922891. Right now, let's head to the phones. We have David in Port Pirie. David, good morning to you.
Look, I've got some. I bought some strawberry plant 2 years ago from Port Germain, and I got a strawberry or two off of it. But now I planted them in the ground, and I call it strawberry fields because I spread them everywhere, and I've got a lot of strawberry plants growing. I mean, a lot. Mm-hmm. But I haven't. They've been there in the ground since last year, I believe, and even spread more and put more in different areas and that, and some in pots. But I haven't actually received any strawberries. They've got a lot of runners in that. What do I need to do?
Okay, so there's a couple of things. First off, bear in mind strawberries prefer cool climates, okay? So when we're in harsh climates, they're going to want semi-shade with shade cloth or something like this. Are these out in full sun or are they in a bit more protection?
Full sun. I just put some in an area with some shade.
Okay. Well, it'll be interesting to watch the difference. Now, the other thing is they prefer acid soil rather than alkaline. And we've got alkaline soil where you are and where I am. So you need to add lots of organic matter, you know, as in compost and well-rotted cow manure and, you know, worm poo, anything like that that you can get. And
well, even like horse manure and that.
Cow manure if you could. I mean, avoid mushroom compost because it can be alkaline, okay? So that's the thing to stay away from. And then the other thing is that when you get all those runners growing, they're basically taking energy away from your plants. So while they're putting lots of energy into runners, they're not putting energy into flowers and fruit, basically. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing is when we have extreme hot weather, that is going to affect pollination because you'll get, less bees around. So
I'm lucky about that because I've got a person who's got their beehives and I've got enough because I've growing native plants and even flowers in their area.
Yeah.
Watering holes. They come to my yard quite regularly.
Oh, fantastic. Because the thing is that even though you've got bees there, when it's like, those 40-degree weeks, the bees will be hiding, they don't like the heat. They come out in the morning and they come out at night. So sometimes it can be a pollination problem that the flowers are not open when the bees are there or whatever. So the most important thing is acid soil and semi-shade where you are. And I just keep going and cut those runners off. And, theoretically, you should find that you've got better success later in the season.
Could I cheat and say, could I have a book? Because I've never received one.
I think they've already been given away. I'm sorry. We give them away every single week. So stay tuned and hopefully, David, your chance will come around. But thanks very much for calling this morning.
You're a pleasant and beautiful day.
Oh, thank you. Straight back to you. That is a lovely thing to say. Now, we are going to have to truncate talk back gardening this morning because Artemis is getting ready to re-enter the Earth's atmosphere. But I think we'll have time to go to Ingrid in Plympton. And you've got a bit of an invasive tree bothering you, Ingrid. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Look, I've got a tree of heaven.
Yep, Aglanthus, yep.
Yes, that's gone through my front garden, my back garden. I did have it poisoned, the initial tree poisoned last year, but unfortunately, I don't know if they put too much poison in it, but it half-killed my forest pansy. The silky oak dropped all its leaves. My Mariah hedge went. I've got a rubber tree, my apricot tree. Everything got affected in my front and backyard. So, obviously the roots are so extensive. It's also come up in my backyard now. And, is there any way that it can be poisoned without affecting the trees that are nearby?
Okay, so you do need to use a tree killer to kill it, which is a woody weed killer, and you do need to use those with caution because they can be quite volatile, which means if you cut and paint and, it's windy, that could blow around. Now, if you get a good arborist in, they should be able to do it properly. You know, some people, when they use woody weed killers, they even put like a plastic bag over the top of the cut so that it's sealed and doesn't go elsewhere. I don't understand why it went so widespread with the damage, but obviously not enough care was taken.
Yeah, no, what happened is that she cut the tree and bored holes into the stump and just put a whole lot of weed killer in the stump. And I think she just put in too much.
Yeah, okay. So you need to do it properly, and unfortunately it is going to involve – you're not going to be able to get rid of it without using a woody weed killer.
Used the tree and blackberry killer with kerosene added to it.
Yeah.
It really just affected everything.
Yeah, so when you cut and paint, cut and swab, you've got to do it carefully. You've got to read – exactly what the instructions say and cover it up, and I'd be getting an arborist in to do that service for you, Ingrid.
Oh, yes, no, I've got an arborist that I've arranged to come, but I just want to make sure that doing it properly.
An arborist will do it properly, and because, you don't want to have impact on your other trees. So good luck with that. That's a tough problem to be dealing with, but I'm sure with the right professional help, you'll be right.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Sophie. Ciao. Bye.
Thank you, Ingrid. Lyndon has called in from Cleve, a lovely part of the world. You've planted a couple of salvia, Lyndon.
Yes, that's right. Planted a few years ago. Fairly close to within a metre or so of a hibiscus that was growing and still is growing beautifully. The salvias this year, for whatever reason, seem to have are dying off, and they've looked to have some white sort of buds. They're the same shape and everything, but instead of the standard colour buds as normal, so I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it's killing the branches or leaves and then branches, the whole lot sort of thing.
It's not like an insect, like cottony cushion scale, or I'm just trying to imagine what would be, or mealybug, or it's not a white insect.
Well, it must be minuscule if it is. I mean,
so you can't see it.
It's actually on the buds, like the unopened buds, have turned white.
I'm not sure what that is, Lyndon. I can't visualise it. So, some salvias are incredibly long-lived and they live for, 20, 30 years. Other salvias are more like annuals, and there are some that I don't think are as hardy as others. So if it's white, sometimes sunburn can cause the growth to get bleached. But I would be heading along and talking to Dana, or Dana, I can't remember how you pronounce her name. I know she's near Cleve or in Cleve. Amazing knowledge and an amazing gardener. And she'll be able to help you with what's going on there, Lyndon.
Lyndon, thank you so much. Thank you to all our callers. We're going to have to leave Talkback Gardening a little early this morning. Sophie, the crew of Artemis 2 are re-entering Earth at 40,000 kilometres an hour right now in the riskiest part of the mission. So, look, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Sophie. Good luck with your weekend ahead, and look forward to catching up with you next week.
Sounds great, Deb. Happy gardening to all our listeners.